Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast is presented by maybe you. Yeah, don't have a sponsor right now. So if you are a business owner or you are someone who knows a business owner looking to get into the podcast advertising game and would like to sponsor the best independent sports podcast today, this podcast, it goes 7 days a week. I'm writing 7 days a week. Yeah, folks, Monday through Friday, NBA, Major League Baseball, the NFL, college football. It's happening every single day on this podcast. On the weekends, guess what? You're getting a Saturday conversation. You're getting maybe a writer from the week. Maybe you're getting a writer from the New York Times. Maybe you're getting an interview with a former MLB All-Star like Luis Gonzalez. You never know who you're going to get on that Saturday show. Sundays, guess what? Movie reviews with Philip Musay. Yeah, I cover movies too. I do just about everything that's possible on the podcasting spectrum. I'm writing about it. I'm podcasting about it. You can get it all on chasethomaspodcast.com. There is no one right now doing what I'm doing every single day. I am giving you content every single day. I am the best at what I do right now. Why not join up? Why not be a presenting sponsor of the Chase Thomas Podcast? Reach out at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at @chase_thomas. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/chasethomaswriter. Leave me 5 stars on Apple. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple. Leave a review. Let's keep this thing going. Uncle Darren, hit my music.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello and welcome to a Thursday afternoon edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Old friend. Chase Thomas Podcast original guy, Chris Walder, up there in the north, where I can't get into, I don't think, right now. Chris, good evening. How are you?
Doing good, brother. Are you calling me old or are you just calling our friendship old? Because I'm getting up there in age. Okay. Thank you. Just to make that clear. I am in my early 30s, but yeah, we go way back, my friend. It's good to hear from you.
I am, I think, what is it? So we are in October. I think I'm at the 6 month mark between, I'm at the 6 month mark before my 30th birthday now.
Oh, welcome to the club sooner.
Hold
soon
on.
Enough.
Don't. No. Not welcome to the club. Not there yet. Let's not count our chickens before they hatch. I am very much in my 20s, as they say, my youthful 20s. 30 feels far away, so we don't have to pretend that I'm nearing 30, actually, Chris.
Well, enjoy the rest of this time, because once you hit 30, it's an entirely different ball game. Everything changes. Everything tastes different. Everything smells different. It's a whole new universe for you.
I don't believe you.
Well, you'll see soon enough. Everything starts to hurt for no reason as well. Get
well, I'm
used to
there.
That. You're already there. Okay. Well, yeah. It only gets worse from here. Every cut, every scrape, every bruise, it hurts that much more when you have a 3 in front of your age.
Mm. I'm excited about my 30s. I don't know about you. And Cody Rhodes did say that the pro wrestler prime starts at 35. So we're not even in our prime yet in pro wrestling timelines.
Well, get me in the squared circle for some suplexes and Hurricane Ranas then, because I am a prime candidate to be throwing it down in the ring.
Well, speaking of throwing it down the ring, not Monday Night Raw, which, Chris, I don't know if you're getting through these 3-hour shows. The ratings this week, I think, was like a 1.67 or something. It's really, really bad at the moment. I wrote about it this week. Monday Night Raw is a program where nothing is happening and it just keeps going. It's amazing that there's a 3-hour program where nothing happens, but they still litter it with rematch after rematch, and just there is no life to that show. At least with SmackDown, NXT, and AEW and Impact, there is life. There is no life on Raw. Is that an oversimplification, or do you feel the same when you watch it?
No, I definitely feel the same way. I mean, watching Monday Night Raw was kind of just part of my routine for the last several years. It was once 8 o'clock hit on a Monday night, I would sit in front of my television and, you know, get myself mentally prepared for 3 hours of professional wrestling. But I've come to realize over the last year or so that it's taken a toll on me as a fan, not because the length of the show, which in and of itself is a problem because it's hard to squeeze 3 hours of content into a weekly wrestling program. But at the same time, it's kind of like the company is taking people like me for granted, people who have been following the company for so many years, because they don't seem to take the show seriously anymore. And it's kind of like you said, it's like they advertise these big matches. Take, for example, you know, this past Monday, and I think there was a rematch between Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre.
Yes.
Right away, I knew that we were not getting a finish. And that is an issue, because I like watching I'm a big fan of the wrestling itself. You know, the storylines, the promo work, it's all kind of a bonus revolving around the actual work inside the ring. But when you advertised and you know mentally that you're going to get a disqualification or get a shady finish just to get around the fact that you don't want to beat either guy, it's like, why am I sitting here for 10 to 15 minutes watching these guys beat the crap out of each other, knowing that nothing is really going to stem from it? And you do that so often. You have storylines that don't make any sense. You have inconsistencies across the board. I have much better ways to spend my time than watching Monday Night Raw.
It's just bad. It really is bad. And we need to talk about Retribution. T-Bar and friends. No surprise that backstage was met with laughs and just despair. And it's like, the one thing I will say about the names is Dominik Dijakovic was not going to get over on the main roster as a name. Like, that is a mouthful. And it's
right.
Not an easy thing to chant. And it would have struggled. T-Bar, I guess, is somewhere of a step up, but like the masks, the Bane stuff, it's not good. This is a talented group, which sucks because everyone in this group, outside of, I guess, maybe Dio Madden, because we really haven't seen enough to figure out whether or not he's actually good. But Shane Thorne, Mia Yim, Mercedes Martinez, and Dijakovic are all extremely talented wrestlers, and Raw needs all of these people. When you watch this show, the absence of Becky Lynch cannot be understated too, where you built around this show, the women's division especially, with her and Ronda Rousey, and both of them just being gone has just left a huge gulf. And I love Asuka, and Asuka is just incredible, but the drop off from that to Asuka feuding with Zelina Vega and Mickie James is just it's huge. And we got a little bit of Bianca Belair this week, which was good. I thought that was a very good video package for her. I don't really know what her slogan means. The EST of WWE, like, it doesn't actually mean anything. But whatever. And then Peyton Royce came off like a star in her backstage kind of stare down conversation with Asuka, who's just giving away title shots, which is a good point that she made. And it's good to see her and Billie Kay still be friends, even if they can't be tag team partners, which I thought was good.
But isn't that just another inconsistency right there, is that they had the breakup of the Iconics. They had, you know, a supposed heel turn. What was it when Peyton Royce threw Billie Kay into the Raw Underground there? And then they had their singles match. And then all of a sudden, it's like we're supposed to forget that these two were kind of kaputs. And now they're kind of back together, but they can't wrestle together. That's what I mean. The writing staff is just winging it every week.
The Raw Underground stuff is just it's just bad. Is there anything you like about it? Like, I'm very annoyed that it's still happening. I mean, it's gonna be one of those things that we're gonna talk about a couple years from now. We're like, remember when they did that? It's going the celebrity host thing where it's just this weird thing that we did on Raw for a little bit, the Purple Ropes Club with the cruiserweights for a little bit. It's just not gonna stick. Like, there's no chance it sticks. And then the guy they're bringing up and using Raw Underground to get over, I'm gonna call him not Tyson Tomko. But he's not good, and that stare down was just Braun Strowman. Why is he there as a SmackDown superstar? What is the idea behind him being able to go to Raw Underground and to be on the show and then bounce around? Like, no continuity there. The Seth Rollins Dominic Mysterio storyline. Can we talk about that for a second? Because it's been 15 years, I guess, since we did a Mysterio paternity storyline, and now we're getting it to maybe being Aaliyah not being Rey's kid. And are they insinuating that Murphy is the father? Is that where they're going?
Whatever they're doing, it's creepy beyond reason, because even if they are teasing that, which wouldn't make a lick of sense to begin with, maybe they're teasing a romantic relationship of sorts. You know, maybe Aaliyah's falling for Murphy, but she's 19 years old, which is creepy. They shouldn't be doing this. It was when it was done, you know, so many odd years ago with Eddie Guerrero, it worked. It was one of the best storylines on SmackDown because it had Eddie Guerrero in it, who was great on the mic, great in the ring, and they could sell this outlandish storyline because you at least had the history between Eddie and Rey being lifelong friends. But now you have Seth Rollins, who this Messiah gimmick is more missed than hit for the better part of the year. And now he comes out to the ring, throwing out these allegations of DNA and paternity. It's like, we've done this before and it was infinitely better back then. Now you're just rehashing lightning in a bottle again, but that's definitely not going to happen.
Is there any way the storyline doesn't just continue on for the next several months? That's what I'm concerned about, is that this was week one and this storyline's already gone on too long. Rollins needs to do something else. Dominic Mysterio needs to do something else. Like, he actually works really well with Humberto. Humberto's got nothing else going on. The Raw tag team division is just wrecked with the Viking Raiders going down and all these different split ups and everything. Mm-hmm. But I would just do that. I don't know why they think they have to do these kind of over the top 2004-y storylines. Like, Dominic Mysterio is an over babyface. He's good. Fans like him. He is just good. And I would just let him team with Humberto for a couple months. Let him do some tag team stuff. Let him work with Humberto, get them both over and have some good matches. But like, what are we doing? We don't need this. Raw doesn't need this. Murphy doesn't need this. Seth Rollins doesn't need this, because Seth Rollins has actually done the best he can with this Monday Night Messiah gimmick. He can do whatever this company needs him to do as a babyface or a heel, but like, this is not it. And I wrote down in my notes where I was like, this promo went on for what felt like 45 minutes. Like, it kept going. He kept talking and it was just so awkward. And Rey, God bless him, love Rey Mysterio forever, god awful on the mic. He'll always be awful on the mic. And his dialogue back was terrible. And it was just, this segment would not end. And then just the bad acting from his daughter leaving and just the weird play. Like, it was this whole thing. Just throw it in the trash, move on. Raw Underground, throw it in the trash, move on. There are so many things on this show that I wrote down where I'm like, just scrap this. It's okay to scrap it, to admit that you failed. Raw just needs an entire reset. And I think it starts with Orton winning the belt from McIntyre.
Well, here's the thing, just to go back to a couple of points about Raw itself. For one, Raw Underground, not for me. I know it's trying to cater to an audience that is into the MMA style of fighting, but this is professional wrestling. And if you want to watch that, you turn on Bellator, you turn on the UFC, who do it much better, obviously. And you're getting basically, you know, Riddick Moss, for example, who no one took seriously when he was competing in the ring, but now you throw him in this squared circle without the ropes in this raw underground setting, and all of a sudden he's a badass, which I can appreciate because you're trying to build him back up, but you've already programmed me to think that he's not a big deal. So, you know, and then you have the Titus O'Neils and the Dolph Zigglers of the world and the Eric or Ivar, whoever isn't injured right now, going in there and getting beat up. It's not working. The wins and the losses don't mean anything. And that's something that I appreciate about watching AEW, which I never miss every Wednesday, is that when I watch a match, when I watch a fight, I know I'm going to get a winner and I know I'm going to get a loser. So everything feels important in the Raw Underground on every card of Monday Night Raw. I just don't feel that way. And to go to the Dominic Mysterio, yeah, he's exceeded a lot of expectations in the ring, but I think a lot of credit goes to Seth Rollins for being such a quality dance partner. He's probably the best between the ropes in the entire company right now, at least until Daniel Bryan gets back in the ring. I wouldn't have been upset to see Dominic take some time off. You know, this went far better. Storyline with his dad, Ray, and Seth Rollins has gone on far too long. I wish they would have put the kibosh in it following that, you know, eye for an eye match, which was gross and didn't make a sense to me. But and then all of a sudden he's thrown into this makeshift tag team with Humberto Carrillo, two guys who have never teamed before. Sure, like they probably have some chemistry, but they're already earning a shot at the tag team titles, or at least an opportunity for a shot at the tag team titles. The Raw tag team division is a joke. They're lacking bodies at the moment, which hurts them. But again, we saw what happened with Angel Garza and Andrade. They broke up, but they're all of a sudden back together. Seth Rollins is beating up Murphy, but they're back together. You know, Humberto and Dominic are a tag team for some reason. It's like you said, I don't want to be that guy that watches wrestling every week and just finds stuff to complain about. It's just WWE is making it so bloody easy as of late. I like wrestling. I want to root for WWE to be successful, especially during a time where the world is in such disarray. We're going through a pandemic. I want to sit in front of my TV for an extended period, pointing at the screen and laughing my ass off, because nothing adds up.
No, it doesn't. And I just, they need to do some stuff. And they miss like little things too. They miss little things that could make this show really pop. Like little moments where it's like, this could be a YouTube phenomenon. Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon. We know their history. We know the Hell in a Cell history. We know their history on SmackDown. They have a segment this week. The bodyguard for Shane jokes about whether or not Shane needs backup to go talk to Kevin. And he's like, no, we're good now. And it's a good play off their history. Mm-hmm. They don't discuss really any of that. It's clear Shane's there for hyping up Raw Underground, and then Kevin gets awkwardly pulled back and attacked by Pirate Aleister Black, but we don't really get the kind of historical conversation that they should have had. Like, instead we got this Andy Levine 2.0 coming out to feud with Braun Strowman, and Kevin Owens just getting pulled to the side, like I said. Like, it's just, that's a little thing that could have been a big part of this show, is Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon come face to face for the first time in a long time. Like, play up the fact that Shane is basically running Raw now. The fans are a lot smarter than they've ever been, and they know what's going on. They know that Shane has a large role on Monday Night Raw now, with Paul Heyman being away. Like, just play into that, and play into the fact that Shane's an authority figure. Play into the fact that Adam Pearce has a weird WWE, whatever his, what was it, WWE, like, figure? Was that what his title was or something like that?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, just play into who's actually running Raw. Let Kevin Owens be the guy who's like, Shane, are you back? Are you my boss again? Like, you could do something there in that segment where, if you had any foresight whatsoever, you could go, hey, Kevin Owens is our best talker on this show. Shane is a good talker, and Shane can actually hold his own in a one-on-one segment with Kevin. Let's do that. Let's forget about Aleister Black and Raw Underground for a second and just do a compelling segment, because guess what? Fans would have just been happy those two talking to each other and interacting for the first time in a long time, right?
Yeah, Kevin Owens is one of the more underutilized superstars on the entire roster. I really liked, you know, pre-pandemic, where they were going with him, giving him the Stone Cold Stunner. He was instantly becoming one of the top faces in the company, and now he just feels like a background player, someone who hosts the Kevin Owens show every now and then, kind of is a mediator for other feuds. And then you see him with Shane McMahon in the ring. There was so much potential there for a back and forth between the two, because us wrestling fans, us who have been watching the product, remember that these two had a pretty intense blood feud for quite some time, which culminated McMahon fired. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, Shane McMahon comes up with this Raw Underground idea. He's all of a sudden back with the company with no real story behind why he's back, other than you just assuming, you know, he's a McMahon, he can do whatever he wants. That would have been an interesting kind of back and forth conversation to really build upon in the ring. But what we get is Shane McMahon in the ring building up to this Braun Strowman and Dabba Kato, whatever the hell his name is, Raw Underground match, which went 2 minutes, and Dakota both Kai. Guys were gassed at Dakota Kai. Yeah, Dakota Kai, the NXT lady. Yeah, but again, with these names, it's so hard to remember. But again, that's something I would have liked to have seen. Just Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens just shooting the shit for 5 minutes before we get to the real reason why they're there, which is to build up that Raw Underground match, which no one necessarily cared for. And that was evident in the ratings we got for Hour 3.
All that being said, the one thing Raw has gotten right in the last couple months, I think I want to get your take on this.
Sure.
The Hurt Business is phenomenal.
I like them to an extent.
Don't you dare. A smile comes on my face every time they come out. Every MVP line, especially backstage, is perfect. Like them laughing at Pierce thinking they were going to work for him for free and that they were going to give him charity. 10 out of 10. Like that group, 10 out of 10.
Okay, so here's the thing.
Oh, no.
MVP is one of the best talkers on the mic in the company. I'm so glad they signed him. I'm so glad he has something to do. This is also the most important Bobby Lashley has felt since he came back to the company, and it's helping me forget about that feud he had with Sami Zayn, where Zayn brought out Bobby Lashley's sisters, and that was one of the worst sets. Lana, which was also just as atrocious. And I like the fact that Shelton Benjamin is involved as well. The veteran gives him something to do. I'm not playing along with the way they got Cedric Alexander into the group. It's kind of like just the mentality of if I can't beat him, join him, which kind of makes him look like a dweeb, but he fits into that group as well. It was just this past Monday night on Raw where they opened the show, they're combating Retribution, and they're made to look like these ultimate baby faces. But then later in the show, they're going, you know, mano a mano with Apollo Crews and Ricochet, who are supposed to be the baby faces. So then they have to play the heels. But then we go to the main event where the Hurt Business is supposed to be the baby faces. But you can also make a case for Retribution being the baby faces. You see where I'm getting at here? There's no real defined characters for these guys. We're going back and forth between baby face and heel. If it's confusing me, it must be confusing to the common wrestling fan, don't you think?
Yeah, my biggest worry, and this is like when Vince stumbles on something where he's like, oh, this is good, so let me get my hands on this. Where like the Hurt Business feuding with Retribution, I don't agree with, because they've really figured out their role as just top heel faction, and we don't need them to feud with another heel and play the babyface role. Like they just... The worst thing that can happen to the Hurt Business is to become baby faces.
Right. And do we remember the first episode where they debuted the Raw Underground, and the show ended with MVP, Shelton, and Lashley in the ring saying, we own the Raw Underground now, we're the top dogs here, we're the bosses and whatnot, and they never followed up on that. Again, it's just, there's no week-to-week consistency. And I'm with you. I do like the Hurt Business. I think they're one of the best things going in WWE right now. I just wish their characters were more defined and they weren't jumbling around with this, you know, whether it's the Raw Underground or the Apollo Ricochet stuff and then the Retribution stuff. I think they're in too many places at once and they have to play different roles in each of those scenarios.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't mean to be a downer. I know you're a Hurt Business guy. If anything, I like the color scheme. I'm digging the black and gold. It reminds me of Raptors OVO.
I actually hate those uniforms.
Get out of here.
Those are the worst ones by far. It's not even close.
I like it for what it's worth.
I mean, it's just no, I'm good. is there any way Retribution gets out of this okay? Is there any way?
God, the sooner the better. If they can ditch these gimmicks, you know, there's those rumors that they're going to Survivor Series to do the traditional Survivor Series match, although there's only technically three of them. Unless you're doing some sort of a mixed tag of some point to get Mercedes and Mia Yim in there. But these are just death knell gimmicks for them. It's a damn shame because I agree with you. The Dominik Dijakovic name would have been hard to really wrap your minds around because it's so long and easy to slip over. But again, he's so great between the ropes. Shane Thorne is as well. I really liked his tag team with TM61 back in the NXT days. I thought they had potential before Nichols left. And Dio Madden, I haven't really seen a lot of in the ring, but that would have been such an easy way to explain his part in Retribution, him being a part of the Raw announced team and then getting laid out by Brock Lesnar and then never having an opportunity to get back to the desk. There was something there, but at the same time, these guys went from these, you know, protest ninjas to evolving into these Mad Max Bane-looking characters with these silly masks and the face paint to boot. Hopefully Survivor Series, they just get swept out of the building and they all of a sudden come back. They've come to their senses and they can return to the characters they were in NXT, because I think two additions like a Mia Yim and a Mercedes Martinez to the women's division right now. I mean, hell, we're getting a random Zelina Vega women's championship match at Clash of Champions on Sunday.
Can someone explain to me why she had to leave Andrade and Garza to enter the women's division?
Who knows, man? Go ask whoever's writing these shows and who's agreeing
Why
to Vince
you,
McMahon.
You don't have to
it.
Break them up. They could just do other things.
What? They've broken up so many damn times at this point.
I don't understand why they think that they can't just do other stuff. That like, oh, we're Kofi Kingston can challenge for the world title, and Xavier Woods and Big E can feud in the tag team scene, and that's okay. Like they can still be a group and do different stuff. Why did it break up? Makes no sense.
Let me ask you this question: which feud has jumped the shark more in 2020? Seth Rollins versus Rey Mysterio, or Andrade and Angel Garza against the Street Profits? Is this not the 100th time we've seen this tag team match in the last 4 months?
I've got a take for you.
Go for it.
Street Profits suck.
In what sense?
They're very annoying. Very annoying.
They have their moments.
I don't think Dawkins is good in the ring. I think Ford does his same spots. He's pretty limited. They're bad on commentary. They're very annoying on commentary. They're just not that good. And like Garza and Andrade are just so much better. And they're so clean in the ring. And they're just like, just give them the titles and build the Raw tag team division around them. Just let them dominate. They're so damn good. It's not even in the same ballpark. And the Viking Raiders, I think, do comedy a lot better than the Street Profits.
The Street Profits are an act that works better in front of a live audience. It doesn't necessarily translate to the Thunderdome. I think there's potential there for Montez Ford as a single star, but I don't think they're going to jump the gun with that anytime soon. I would love for him to play like this power couple gimmick with Bianca Belair, you know, maybe give Montez Ford the United States run the women's division until Becky Lynch returns, hopefully in another year or two. And Dawkins has grown on me. He's lost a little bit of weight. He's getting more fluid in the ring. I don't think they're the disaster that you're making them out to be. They certainly have moments where they're annoying.
They're not my cup of tea. Like, I'm not a Street Profits guy. I'm just not.
So you would rather see the division revolve around an Andrade and an Angel Garza then?
Yes, 100%.
Okay. And then who would feud with them? We're running out of babyface tag teams.
That's not my problem. That is not my problem. They had more tag teams. They broke them up. That is not my problem.
That's why we're getting this random appearance from Cesaro and Nakamura, right? Just to get another tag team onto the scene on Monday Night Raw. We're running out of bodies, man. These injuries are starting to add up.
AEW did. When AEW ran out of bodies in the women's division for a couple months this summer, you know what they did? Nothing. They just disappeared. I think the Raw tag team division should just disappear for a couple of months until they can recalibrate.
There should really only be one tag team championship in the entire company, because the fact that you have two and you're lacking challengers on both brands, it just even more so. I would rather just unify the tag team titles at Survivor Series, maybe, and then just have one giant tag team division, because it's not like you're having a problem having people jump back and forth between shows. Everything is in that bubble out in Orlando, so you just continue on with the COVID testing, and I don't see any problems.
I think that's where they're going anyway, my hunch.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Have you been watching Impact lately?
I've been following it online. I haven't had a chance to really watch the product. I'm happy for Eric Young going from obscurity in WWE to now being their world champion. I really like what they're doing with his feud with Rich Swann. I like the RVD gimmick with his girlfriend there and his feud with Sammy Callahan.
Is that a gimmick? I think he's just a happy 45-year-old stoner who is just living his best post-relevant life, where he's just, I'm not trying to be the guy in any company anymore. I'm happy. I guess the two girlfriend storyline's over. And it's just him and Katie Forbes. But
at least on air.
RVD can still do his stuff. Like, he's still in great shape for his age. Sammy Callahan, I have mixed things. His entrance is perfect. I just wish Impact would do a little bit more with the sound. I had Chris Sabin on the podcast last week, and we were talking, and the guy, I'm really rooting for a lot of guys. Ace Austin will actually be on the podcast next week, but
very cool.
Their tag team division is built really well right now, and Good Brother, just seeing the Good Brothers, Motor City Machine Guns, and the Rascals talking backstage was cool. Wrestle House is like one of my favorite things in professional wrestling that I'm very upset they've moved on from, because the last week, I guess it was last week or 2 weeks ago, where AC Romero and the Deaners, so Triple XL and the Deaners had this like long 20-minute, just over the top ridiculous match in Wrestle House. Tommy Dreamer had amazing spots in there. Like, they're doing a lot of interesting stuff. They're trying different things, but their women's division,
because they can afford
stacked. And their tag team division is stacked. Like, Jordan Grace and Tennille Dashwood closed the show. Tennille Dashwood is fantastic. Kylie Rae is challenging Deonna Purrazzo for the women's title at Bound for Glory. And then we have, Taya Valkyrie and Rosemary doing their cool stuff backstage. And Heath, just an incredible. Did you see Chuck Norris, Flavor Flav, the Hasselhoff? All appeared.
Yeah, they got the cameo appearances. Yeah, that was so cool. A nice little touch. You can get away with it, pay a few bucks to get them on the show, and why not? I appreciated that.
Last thing on Impact, and we'll get to AEW to wrap up here. TJP, I think, might be my favorite in-ring worker right now. I was thinking about that this week. We're like,
wow.
He is so crisp. He is so quick. He is so good. Like, he's figured out how to do a just barn burner professional wrestling match that keeps you engaged for a 10 to 15 minute stretch. I'm not sure I want to watch him for 40, but TJP, everything looks good. His reversals are just always top notch. His submissions are just perfect. Like, his Boston Crabs, his whatever he turns his stuff into, like, he's so innovative in the ring that, like, watching this triple threat this week against him, Chris Bay, and Trey Miguel, those three all could go and just were incredible. But TJP is just on another level, I think. And I don't know. I think he could do a lot. I would not hate eventually putting him in the world title conversation. I understand he's always been a lifelong X Division Cruiserweight guy, but like, that's all changing. And Adam Cole, is he really bigger than TJP? I don't think so. Pat McAfee could back me up on this. I don't know. I feel like I need to give some kudos to TJP for turning into maybe the best professional wrestler on the planet.
Wow, that is quite the hot take, Chase. I have not seen, I admittedly have not seen a lot of his work in Impact Wrestling. I was a fan of his when he was the Cruiserweight champion. His promo work left a lot to be desired, but you know, his matches were top notch, and I'm glad to hear that he's, you know, pushing the boundaries, pushing the limits in Impact Wrestling. It's just, you know, Impact has their guys at the top right now. It may take him a while to kind of get out of that X Division threshold and be in the world title picture, but I would love to see him there. I, you know, secretly I had his WWE like Super Mario-esque theme music as my ringtone for quite some time. I still have it on my iPhone to this day. I hated the fact when he ditched that. Yeah, it was so good. I thought it was going to help him get over to like a younger audience. I remember Xavier Woods going on Twitter saying, "Why the hell can't I get that entrance music?" You know, but that's neither here nor there. He's down in Impact Wrestling now. And again, just from your recommendation, I'm going to have to check out some of his work.
Definitely do it, because he's top notch. I think he's just the best in-ring 10-minute sprint worker today. It has to be a 10-minute sprint. And he is just going to entertain and just put on a fucking clinic.
I praise.
AEW last night. A lot happened. They had to rewrite some stuff because of some COVID things that have come out today. But I thought this was a very good show. My line of the night was 18 years, says I deserve this shot. This was the night for Eddie Kingston. Mm-hmm. Put on an absolute promo clinic to open this show. I really... Eddie Kingston is just a different animal, and he is so refreshing. I wrote about this today that you can read at chasethomaspodcast.com, but he reminds me so much of CM Punk, where like he is so charismatic, he's so smart, he's so angry, he's so impassioned, he hates when people sell out, he hates when people kiss ass, he is just an ideologue that never took any shortcuts, that believes that people have always turned their back on him, and he has his followers, he has his own straight edge disciples, with the Lucha Bros and Butcher and the Blade and everything now, but like he
right
is just so good, and he's so different, where everybody in professional wrestling can work now. Everybody's a good wrestler, unless you're like Lana, Natalya, Nia Jax, Jinder Mahal, The Ascension. There aren't many bad professional wrestlers anymore. Like, most people can go in the ring. Like, you're stunned whenever you see someone just really drop the ball and it's just god-awful in the ring. Like, they're just not that many. It used to be half the roster, more than half the roster couldn't work. And it was all about promos and everything else. We flipped, and most of these people cannot talk. Sasha Banks can't talk. Bayley has gotten a lot better. Jinder Mahal cannot talk. What can Jinder Mahal actually do? I'm not actually sure, folks. There are people up and down the roster that are not comfortable with a microphone in their hands, and that's okay. Like, not everyone needs to do that sort of thing. Roman Reigns can't talk as a babyface. Brock Lesnar can't really talk. It's not a trait everybody can master. That's okay. But when you see someone now that can, you're like, whoa. This is why I got into professional wrestling in the first place. This is what I grew up with, and this is like what's compelling. This is why I want to watch this product, because I don't want to watch just because wrestlers have matches. I need to have something else. I need something to sink my teeth into. And Eddie Kingston provides that. Eddie Kingston is damn good, and his logic for Moxley and calling him the sports entertainer, and then in the ring, come on, entertainer. Like, everything about it felt genuine. Like, Mox sold out, went to WWE, got off the CZW circuit, Eddie stayed, Eddie struggled, and then they still ended up in the same spot in a world title match to close an episode of Dynamite. It was perfectly done.
He was hands down the best part of AEW last night, and they AEW, you know, it wasn't an ideal situation when Lance Archer came out revealing that he had COVID, and they had to change the entire plan for the night with that six-man tag team match, but because for weeks Eddie Kingston had been going out on the mic and killing it with his promo work, saying, "I was never eliminated from that casino battle royale." So he, you know, the putting him together with Jon Moxley, a wrestling fan's dream match, especially an independent wrestling fan's dream match, to see those two clash, a hard hitting match, the knife edge chops from Eddie Kingston you could hear through the TV, hurt like a bitch, the best match on the card by far as well. And I'm just happy to see him in this spot. You know, this was nothing that was guaranteed for him. You know, this was a guy who was, but then he gets this TNT championship match with Cody. hits it out of the park. Everyone on Twitter is begging for this guy to get signed. He eventually gets this deal, and now he's in this prominent position on television, on weekly television, with his own faction, although he won't call it that. It's his family with Penta El Zero and Phoenix and the Butcher and the Blade, which I think is a great spot for him. Hopefully this isn't the end of him and John Moxley. I would love for them to have them have a month-long feud just to kind of like get into whenever John Moxley drops the belt, whether it's against Lance Archer or someone else down the road. But give me more Eddie Kingston, give me more John Moxley.
I'm right there with you. I think we're going to get a long storyline here, which is good. I don't think Lance Archer is in the plans long term. He's great to murder Hawk in his own way, but there's a lot of meat left in this bone. The fact that Kingston did not tap out, I think, was important here. Mm-hmm. Do you like Mox's new finisher? Do you like that bulldog chokeout?
Yeah, I mean, Brian Kendrick introduced it in the cruiserweight division, but no one's paying attention to that. So John Moxley can take it. The more present and put in the match, the better, because you know, most of the time wrestling fans will watch a match, they're going to wait for Moxley to hit the paradigm shift, but give him a couple of other moves, you know, whether it's that submission chokehold, maybe win a match or two with the Gosh style pile driver, you know, tease maybe a rematch with Minoru Suzuki down the road. But I like wrestlers having two or three finishing moves that they can get out of a match with, and Cody has kind of worked that when he had the TNT title doing the open challenge, whether he was winning with the crossroads or coming off the middle rope with the Cody cutter or winning with the figure four. That's amazing. It makes you pay attention to the match and not necessarily wait for that one move.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Some other things from this show that I wanted to touch on. Miro had his in-ring debut.
Not good.
Oh, you didn't like it.
I thought the match was very sloppy in the middle. Mm. I wouldn't say it was necessarily Miro's fault. I think a lot of it
came
from...
Why did they do the thing where he played injured early on? He did not sell that very long.
Makes you think maybe he was. Maybe he twisted his ankle.
It was weird.
Maybe that wasn't written into the match.
It was just strange. He just stopped selling that about two-thirds way into the match. Like, he had that weird fall, and then he was like, I'm good. I didn't understand why they did that.
For his in-ring debut, for his in-ring debut, I would have rather him been out there with either Janela or Sunny Kiss and just squash them in 2 to 3 minutes. But I guess they wanted to mix it up a bit, because AEW is, they have a lot of monster characters right now. They have Lance Archer, they have, you know, Brian Cage. They're trying to build up Will Hobbs as well. Maybe they didn't want to throw Miro into that mix. Having him in the tag team with Kip Sabian is a good idea. You know, they have the best man gimmick, and then the Twitch streaming, which is really funny, although I'm not a Twitch guy. But that's obviously leading down the road to Miro maybe destroying Sabian and Penelope Ford's wedding. But we'll see when the time comes. But I would have rather seen a squash in this scenario. I think the match went too long for what it was, and again, it was really sloppy in the middle. I don't know per se if Miro was hurt. Maybe his ankle played a part into that, but yeah, not a strong way to open Dynamite.
The one thing where I will disagree is that I think Miro came up like, just the what reminded me, he's not Brock Lesnar, but the trunks and some of his movements and his presentation tonight or last night was Brock Lesnar-y. And
he's jacked. Yeah.
He has never been in this kind of shape. Like, Rusev is in insane shape right now. And it's at that point. It was interesting when he talked about the fact that he sees himself as like the modern Kurt Angle, where he can do the comedy stuff while also being serious in the ring. That's where he's most comfortable. And Rusev is genuinely funny, and I think that works. I will say, the way he's working right now, and the way people are getting thrown into him, and the way that what Kip Sabian was doing, where he's tossing Kip Sabian into like Joey Janela and stuff, and the way people are bouncing off him, because I think there was a moment in this match where Janela hit him in the face, and he completely nil-sold it on the ring apron, and got in, and it scared him. Like, he has some Brock Lesnar-y qualities to him, and I know he wants to be Kurt Angle, but he might be a little bit more Brock Lesnar-y. I don't know. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying he's going to be the biggest draw in professional wrestling, but I am going to say that he has a lot of upside. It just, WWE letting him go was one of the more just head-scratching, what are you doing type things, because he is extremely talented and he's going to be a star in this company.
as down I was as I was on that opening match, I think Miro came off just like a beast, like you said, Brock Lesnar-esque. They need to find a name for that finishing move. I think Jim Ross did refer to it as the accolade. You obviously want to get that out of people's memory, but he looked really good. The guy's jacked as can be. You know, he almost reminded me, if you're a Pokemon fan out there, he looked like Graveler, just like chiseled out of stone, broad shoulders, just looking like an absolute monster. And I hope they continue to play with that. I like the chemistry that he does have with Kip, but that is, I mean, it's obvious to anyone watching that he's going to beat the hell out of Kip somewhere down the road.
Yeah. Cody thoughts, the new look, emo Cody, Panic at the Disco Cody. How are we feeling?
I couldn't take him seriously after getting that neck tattoo. So he's already kind of ruined the look for me. Again, the dark hair is what it is. He had dark hair when he was in WWE. I prefer him with the blonde. I'll give you that. It is much darker. I guess he's trying to come off with a new persona to battle the Dark Order and Brody Lee. It looks like they're teasing a dog collar match, maybe for the anniversary show. Who knows? But I almost preferred if he had stayed away for a little bit longer just to make that return all the more special. I think last night's Dynamite needed a moment like that, and Cody's return fit the bill. But, you know, with the beatdown that Brody Lee gave him, I would have rather seen someone else thrown into the mix for the TNT title and then build up to. But I guess AEW just wanted him back on television, which I can totally understand. We'll see next week on Dynamite if he accepts the challenge. Spoiler alert, he probably is.
Yeah, it's bad. This look is bad. I like Cody. This look, everything about this is bad. His necktie is bad. I like Cody, but oh god. I get where they're going with this. Like you said, he has to go to this different place to battle the Dark Order and everything, but like,
can I just say this quick about the Dark Order, a gimmick I despised. Ooh. At first, if we were to do a gimmick of the year, if we were to place a vote right now, the Dark Order would probably win it. And
wait,
God
gimmick
bless,
of the year,
gimmick of the year, group of the year, whatever you want to call it,
faction
the Dark
of the year?
Order, faction of the year. I don't give them all of the awards.
No.
I watched these
faction
guys
of
on.
The year?
I watch these guys. You know what? I like the Dark Order more so than the Hurt Business, my friend. I'll tell you that right now. So we can get into a conflict about this. But have you watched Being the Elite as of late?
No, I don't watch Being the Elite. I will.
Oh my. So the fact you will not understand why I am so appreciative of this gimmick. Brody Lee's chemistry with John Silver is goddamn hilarious. And all you have to do is watch the opening of the Being the Elite when Brody Lee became the TNT champion. And Brody Lee comes in, they're celebrating, and then John Silver and Alex Reynolds come in with chilies, and they have a couple of other skits in the episode. I was dying. The comedic chemistry that these guys have, I wish it was on more on display during actual television. And that's kind of the thing. I wish, you know, Weekly Dynamite wouldn't, because there's so many storylines that cross over that people watching Dynamite, strictly Dynamite, may not understand. But those guys are so goddamn funny. Please, I encourage you, Chase, watch Being the Elite, if only for the Dark Order.
I don't know. Strong.
I'm blowing your mind right now.
I'm more of a Santos Escobar guy. Love
God.
Me some
Look,
Santos.
Look, you're coming at me with these TJP is the best worker in the business right now, and I'm coming at you with the Dark Order is the faction of the year. So we're both dropping some hot takes right now.
I'm going to get some pushback on the TJP point, I think.
I would just encourage people. Just a little.
Yeah, like, here we go. This is how we sell it. Your Dark Order obsession, just watch Being the Elite, and I think people will maybe side with you. If you are pushing back against my TJP is the best working wrestler in the company, right, in just professional wrestling right now, go watch 10-minute TJP matches of the last 2 years. Just watch 10 minutes, the first 10. See what he does. See if you look at your phone at any moment during that time period. See if you are not completely engaged and enthralled by his counters and just how much movement he is just pulling off, and just how quick he is able to transition from aerial moves to submission holds and everything. Like, just watch it. Just see.
Like we're encouraging wrestling fans to watch more wrestling, and at the end of the day, we're doing right by the business.
That you're about to say, then what are we doing? We're really just wasting people's time at that.
Yeah, you could also make that argument, especially these days.
Well, that's all I've got, Chris. Is there anything you would like to plug before we get out of here today?
Sure thing, man. Well, first of all, just thank you for having me back on the podcast. I always enjoy chatting some wrestling with you. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Walder Sports, and be sure to subscribe to my own podcast, The Walder Sportscast. You can find me on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Podbean, or wherever it is that you download your shows. It's mostly a Toronto Raptors based podcast, but I have a lot of different guests on that show, so I encourage you to check it out.
All right, go do that. Keep up the great work, sir. And we'll have you back on the podcast soon.
Thanks. I can't wait.
This is Ben Ingram, radio voice of the Atlanta Braves, and I'm here to tell you that you've reached the end of today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. As a friend of the podcast, I'd like to say thank you for listening to today's episode and hope you return for the next one. To show your support for the program, tell a friend or coworker or even a family member about the program. And if you're an Apple Podcast listener, leave the show a rating and a review. Goes a long way. That'll do it for me. But don't forget to listen to myself and the rest of the team at 680 The Fan and the Braves Radio Network this season. Go Braves!
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.